From Anime News Network in Los Angeles, this is ANNcast. I'm Justin Savakis.
And I'm Zach Birchie. Thanks for listening this week. This is our number two show, so second edition, I guess. We're just going to get right into it. I don't think we need to sit here and explain what the show is at this point.
It's a podcast, and you can listen to it on your iPod.
Right, yeah. So I want to start by just going off topic, and if you don't want to hear about this, whatever, that's what the show notes are for. I got to talk about this Avatar trailer.
Yeah, that came out this morning.
Yeah, just so for reference, we're recording this Thursday the 20th. Today's the 20th, yeah. Right? And this Avatar trailer for James Cameron's new project came out. And what did you think?
I think that furries will love it. And I think everyone else would. It looks kind of, although the special effects are great and everything, it just looks kind of, it gives me a Final Fantasy Spirits Within vibe.
If Final Fantasy The Spirits Within came out in 1989...
Yeah, it felt really dated in premise.
Yeah,
look.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's like Cameron's design sensibilities got stuck in the early 90s, and so it's all neon, and the creatures look like straight off the cover of, like, a Trapper Keeper. I mean, it's so 90s. The first thing that came to mind was that cartoon Dino Saucers. Have you ever seen that?
I have no memory of this, but from the sounds of it, I'm glad for that.
Yeah. And I've been mocking the hell out of it all morning, just like everyone else has. But there's a funny and a sad thing. Like, part of me feels really bad for James Cameron. Like, I feel kind of terrible for him. Because, as you might know, he's had this script since, like, 85. Like, he's been knocking it around.
Clearly.
He's been knocking it around for, like, 20 years. He wrote it. They didn't have the technology then, so he waited. He waited 15 years, and then he finally makes the most popular and successful movie of all time, and he finally has the money to put this huge sci-fi opus out there, and it's blood, sweat, and tears, and then it's 5 years of just production, and he gives birth to this painful, painful baby that he's just so proud of, and he puts it out there, and a bunch of dopes like me are sitting around going, yeah, it looks like a Trapper Keeper.
You know, this may be burying it a little prematurely, but you have to admit, when you attain that level of success and you command that much of a budget and you're already known as being a bit of a tyrant, nobody is going to tell you no on anything. So you'd realize that, like, he's literally going unchecked through the entire production process, I'm betting.
He's like, hey guys, what do you think of this? And everyone's like,
it's great.
Is that the cover of the latest Journey album? No, these are my creature designs. I guess we should talk about anime.
Yeah.
Okay. So what were we talking about this week?
Sword of the Stranger.
I saw that on Blu-ray a couple of weeks ago.
I have the Blu-ray. I saw it before, so yeah. I haven't gotten around to watching it yet, which is, I really want to check out the dub, because it's an Ocean job, and they usually do a good job, but
yeah.
I was worried because I heard that they didn't replace the Chinese.
They didn't? So it's all that bad Jap, like, faux Mandarin or whatever
right.
it was?
Right. I heard that. I don't know that for 100% sure.
That's no good. What did you think of the film?
I love the film. I mean, it's a popcorn movie. Clearly, it's a popcorn movie. And it's possibly some of the best fight choreography ever animated, I think.
Really?
It is meticulous and looks amazing. And, you know, the plot has very been there, done that. But sometimes it's all you need. I mean, you're there for the fight scenes and you're there for you know, the epic feel of it and the visuals. All you really need in a situation like that are characters you can get behind. And it had that.
See, that was my problem with it. Now, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed more what it represented than what it actually was, I think, but we'll get to that in a minute. I really didn't connect with the characters. I mean, I cared about the dog, because, of course, there's a dog, and you're going to care about the dog.
And it's adorable.
It's a cute dog. the rest of the characters, I mean, I wasn't particularly attached to any of them, and I found myself not really caring.
The kid's a jerk.
Yeah, the kid's a jerk, and the Ronin hero guy is kind of generic. But I mean, I liked where it went, and like you said, the fight scenes were really good. Some of the weird Chinese stuff got a little dicey for me, I think.
I get that, but you know, the first time I watched it, I saw, you know, it was a battle, you know, Chinese versus Japanese, and I was expecting it to be, you know, kind of jingoistic, and you know, Chinese people are dirty and stupid and that sort of thing. Frankly, the Japanese look worse in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
They are, you know, opportunistic, shallow, and just kind of the only people that seem like they're worth anything are the mysterious possibly foreign, you don't know where they're from people. There's the big, tall, blonde guy that's on the Chinese team.
Yeah.
And Nanashi, the main character.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he has red hair. Nobody knows where he's from either. It seems just, you know, equally damning of both societies, and that was refreshing.
Well, what I really appreciated about it is that it was not what it's not what we get most of the time from anime films these days. It seems like the stuff that's getting produced is the usual Shonen Jump recap or spin-off movies.
Right.
And it seems like we're getting fewer and fewer of these. We get like one every year, one every 2 years. The last one I can think of that was an original idea was Girl Who Leapt Through Time.
Yeah, there's not many. Well, unless it's Miyazaki or Satoshi Kon.
Right. Yeah, it feels like we don't get enough of this product, and it does feel like it was written at least for a more mature audience. It didn't seem too dumb. It didn't seem like it was pandering to the otaku crowd. It was just its own thing. And lately, there's been a lot of discussion about the total stagnation of creativity in the anime, in terms of what anime is coming out of Japan. I want to see more stuff like Sword of the Stranger, even though I didn't respond to it as positively as you did. I want more of that. I want less of the otaku in-joke bullshit. I'm tired of that stuff.
I personally definitely agree. Business-wise, I can see exactly why this has happened.
Right.
These movies, because TV animation has gotten so good, mm-hmm. the expectation visually for these movies is so high that, you know, Sword of the Stranger, I'll bet, cost at least $5 million to produce.
Which is pennies for an American studio.
Pennies for an American studio, but remember that most TV anime costs $60,000 an episode. I actually have that number. That's not an exaggeration. It is actually that cheap to make.
I wonder if there's anything outside of cable access on American TV that costs that little to produce.
No. Maybe some reality shows, but even them.
Well, you used to work at Imagination TV. How much did your original...
No, that is not a good meter. Let's not go there.
Fine. You can't even give me like an average production budget for an original show? You're like
$2,000. Wow. I'm not kidding. The show that we did, Uncle Morty's Dub Shack, cost $2,000.
For the whole show?
Whole show.
How many of those were there?
Well, they did 2 seasons of 10, I think.
And that was $2,000?
Well, the thing is, we did them all in-house, so you're not counting everyone's salary. So that's kind of a lie as far as budget number goes. But at any rate, the Japanese media market isn't that big. And it used to be they could subsidize this stuff with overseas sales, but that's not so much the case anymore because, you know, Americans aren't buying anything. So whenever anyone wants to put together a big, huge movie like this, you have to get 8-9 companies on the production committee just to get it financed. And that just can't happen very often. Not to mention it's made them very skittish as far as what projects are good to invest like that. Even Sword of the Stranger, I don't think, made that much money.
Well, would you say Sword of the Stranger was aimed at more of a Western audience? I don't think so.
I don't think they had a particular... You know, whenever everyone asks that question, what do you think of the American market when you produce these things? Everyone in Japan gives pretty much the exact same response. Like, I don't really think about where people are when I make this. I just kind of have a story to tell.
Mm.
And I think Sword of the Stranger is probably the same way. You know, the exception of these things being things like Escaflowne and the second season of Big O, where they made it specifically for the American market, even though because it bombed in Japan.
Right. Is that like an after? Like, I know Big O was produced for Cartoon Network, but like Escaflowne, wasn't that an excuse? Like it bombed horribly, and they're like, oh, this was made for the USA. We didn't intend for Japanese audiences to connect with it.
The movie.
Oh, the movie.
Yeah, the movie, I was referring to, sorry.
Because the show didn't do all that well over there either.
No, it didn't. It was caught up in the wake of Ava, I think.
Right.
But yeah, if you look back in anime history, the other thing is half the things that we call movies were really just kind of OAVs that graduated. For example, there were a ton of little movies that they just made it and they're like, well, why don't we make a couple 35 millimeter prints and put them in theaters and we can call it a movie. Happened all the time from a lot of the little one shots, like, for example, Ultimate Teacher. The Ultimate Teacher had a theatrical run.
You're going to have to remind me what the hell Ultimate Teacher was.
Ultimate Teacher was a schlocky school toughs anime about a girl with, you know, Lucky Kitty gym shorts.
Yeah, I don't think I ever saw that.
It's a buried treasure.
Oh, it is.
Do you read my column, Zach?
I don't have your column memorized. That's the case.
Yeah, it was clearly animated for like no money, and they just threw it in theaters. They stuck one other now forgotten hour long OAV with it, and they put it in theaters, called it a roadshow, and you know, charged $20 a ticket.
Wow. I mean, I guess it's just everybody complains about the stagnation of creativity. There isn't anything new under the sun. We're just getting the same 12 products over and over again, and it's only getting worse with the recession. Right. I mean, I looked at the upcoming slate for winter show or fall shows, and man, it's Moe and some shonen and some adaptations of popular shonen comics, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's just like any entertainment industry. When things get bad and big companies are producing, they're all going to play it really safe.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because it's funny when you see some of the fans, they still have the attitude like anime is this edgy new thing, and it's totally not like American stuff, man. It's totally not like that. And they don't operate on the same way we do. No, they do. The latest Moe show is the Transformers 2, the G.I. Joe. You know, they're producing it because they know it will make money for them, and that's why they're making it.
Well, let's not call Moe shows that level of mainstream over there.
Well, I mean, just in terms of why they're making it, like
right.
Their motivation for that's why they're making it.
If that has a parallel, that would probably be the new Naruto movie that goes nowhere and doesn't advance the plot at all.
Well, I guess my metaphor is a little confused, but it's just nobody has any illusions that Transformers 2 was produced for creative reasons.
Yeah.
That's not the reason that show was made. And I would submit that's not the reason any of those Moe shows are made either.
No, it's
purely
it's
profit motivation.
And, you know, when everything else looks like it's going to lose money, why would you bother making anything else?
Yeah, so it's kind of a rock and a hard place. Like, we're sitting here going, please, we're starving for good, new, mature, creative content. But it's unreasonable to ask for it, right? I mean, that's, at this point, you can't, if the answer is, sorry, no.
Yeah. But, you know, it's not like this is purely an anime problem. This cuts across the entire entertainment industry. Nothing except for a couple big tentpole blockbusters are making any money right now.
Yeah, that's a shame. Well, anyway, so do we want to break and bring our guest in?
Sure, why not?
Okay, let's do that.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Yeah. Day, as I was dreaming about Kellogg's Cocoa Krispies and how colossal they are, I reached for the alarm clock. And I chocolatized it. I didn't even know it caused it, even.
But I do, Snag Old Puss. I've given you the chocolate touch. Whatever you wish, you may chocolatize.
So I lived like a king on a chocolatized throne. In a chocolatized castle, mind you. I had a chocolatized motorcycle, even. But it wasn't practical. I found out only certain things ought to be chocolatized. And this is one of them. Kellogg's Cocoa Krispies. They taste like a chocolate milkshake.
Only crunchy, and they're great for snacks right out of the box.
You're absolutely correct, even.
Hey, not me too.
Next time you're at the store, look for me on Kellogg's Cocoa Krispies. I'll be waiting for you, thinking my chocolate thoughts.
Okay, we're back, and joining us in the studio is voice actress extraordinaire, Stephanie Shea.
Hello.
Thanks for being on the show. We really are happy to have you here.
Yep.
The obvious topic is the dub industry, and Justin and I have noticed the new thing for fans to complain about, and we really want to get your professional take from the professional side, because we see the fan side, obviously. Now they're complaining that there's no dubs, that nothing gets dubbed anymore unless it's coming out of Texas. I mean, I just kind of want you to go on that subject, like, what's going on with the dubbing?
I think it's, gosh, I don't even know where to start, because it all goes back for in terms of the cause. But I really do think that, you know, I think the industry made a few mistakes on how to market things, and but ultimately they could not, you know, slay the big downloading free, you know,
download BitTorrent beast.
Exactly. So it becomes a thing where, like, it seemed like anime was getting more and more popular. You know, it seemed like it was heading for mainstream, and everyone was like, well, it has to be in English in order for it to be mainstream. But then what happened was it never really got mainstream enough, you know. And so then it started being like the people who liked it weren't paying for it. And it's just more expensive. It's more expensive to, you know, dub a show than it is to subtitle the show.
Yeah, we're talking, what, about $8,000 or $9,000 an episode? Or
And see, 10? Even those numbers are, it's hard to say because it used to be a certain number and then people just slashed budgets and it got lower and lower and lower. I've heard all sorts of numbers in terms of, and then people started going to different countries to dub in English and it was even cheaper.
We all know how the various experiments paying Odex in Singapore to dub anime. Those turned out really well.
Yeah, well, I'm actually glad that they didn't turn out so well.
I'll bet.
So I'm glad that people are complaining that there is no dub. I'd say complain away, and hopefully there will be more dubs.
Our poor forums. Oh, my God. I'm just crying.
Really, I mean, if people... Really, really. If they want more dubs, they just have to buy the DVD. They just have to, or, you know, somehow pay for it is really the key.
If say, like, you're, now this is great. This is gold. I got to get your take on this. Say, like, somebody is angry, like, oh, they're not dubbing these shows. I really wanted a dub on this show. In your opinion, what is the best way for them to get that message across to the person releasing the show? Would they, like, go buy it, like, copy the receipt, show a photo of them holding the box and the receipt, and, like, send that to them and then say, I'm buying your stuff, please dub it? I mean, what do you suggest these complainers do?
That's a very good idea. Like, whatever it takes. I think really, too, is also convincing their peers and their friends to also pay for the anime. And, you know, write letters and let producers know that, hey, I will pay for a dub, you know?
I got to say something here. I mean, yeah. I've done the math on this. And let's lowball the earlier estimate I gave and say $7,000 an episode.
Okay.
At that price, say you're putting out 4 episodes on a single DVD and putting it out for $25. That means you're probably taking home $12. Now that you're, you know, $11, you know, isn't going through authoring and production and all that. That means at that rate, you have to sell over 3,500 units just to break even on the dub cost. That's before licensing. That's before anything. Now, I agree that a lot of anime really should have a dub. And if it's ever going to do any numbers, it needs to have one. But you got to admit that a good number of these shows that were coming out fully dubbed, fully, you know, feature-packed DVDs, they really had no business thinking that they were going to do any kind of numbers.
I think, like, if you want to go back to, in terms of where I, you know, if you were to say, like, when I allude to what I'd said earlier, but I think the industry made some mistakes, you know, some of the mistakes I think that they made was that they were picking up licenses so quickly and then not thinking about how they were releasing it. You know, Genion would release a show and then the same week release the show that would have the exact same demographic as the show that they released instead of staggering it, like release a boy show and a girl show, you know, like things like that. I've heard before that the number is around 10,000 to break even, but I don't know units to break even. I don't know if things have changed since then, and I don't know exact. But no, you're right. It's tough. It's an uphill battle, and I just think that people don't have. It's just people aren't willing to spend the money. The crazy thing about it is the thing that for me is like a huge dichotomy is that I go to these conventions. And the attendance at the conventions can be ridiculous, you know? And if you thought, if every person who went to a con, just purchased one DVD, I feel
it
like...
It saved the industry.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, and
right?
The voice actor panels are always packed. It's not like you don't have a ton of fans.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if you fill up the room seats 1,000... And everyone in there bought volume 2 or whatever. That's a good sized dent. I mean, it's something, you know? Right. I mean, not 1,000 people, but
We know no one's buying DVDs, and that's a problem.
So I think that's the main problem. So, like, Justin, yes, 35,000 units seems like a lot. But then when you 100. Add, or 3,500?
Yeah, what? But let's face it, most anime DVDs weren't breaking 2,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. But then if you look at the people who go to cons and you just tally the number of people who go, it's well over that. If everyone just bought one DVD.
Right.
Did Toei, remember when Toei tried to do it on their own?
Yeah.
Did they dub Slam Dunk?
Yeah. They dubbed it in Canadialand.
Okay. Cause that's always the hilarious example of Slam Dunk came out and literally sold 50 copies and then disappeared.
Right.
I don't get that either because I watched Slam Dunk. you know, like, fan subs.
Yeah. Hey, so did I in college.
And a long, long time ago. And granted, by today's standards, the art is kind of dated. But the story is so good, and it's so freaking funny. And, like, I am a fan of the show, and I didn't even hear about it. Like, I heard that they had dubbed it and released it, like, way long after the fact. And even to this day, it's like, I've never even seen a copy sold or even seen a copy advertised to be sold.
From a marketing perspective, I mean, I think the big takeaway for the industry from the entire bubble burst is marketing is hard. And, you know, we goof on Funimation for having, you know, some not exactly stellar taglines and copywriting sometimes. But frankly, they are still around because they had by far the best marketing out of any anime company. They, you know, if you saw what these companies were doing to market it, first of all, 80, 90% of it was in trade publications. And that is kind of just money down the toilet because everything's big chains. There's really no point in paying to advertise to little mom and pop chains that don't exist anymore. You know, you'd do better just making a couple phone calls. So there's that. And then the stuff that was meant for the general public usually was just really kind of amateurish and didn't have any real creativity behind it. And it costs money to market. I mean, this is something that the mainstream is still having a problem with.
I gotta say, though, I just think that I don't want to slam, you know, all the companies who've given us work, but that maybe some of the marketing people should think outside the box a little bit. I know that I don't know who was in charge of it or who made it happen or if anyone made it happen, but, you know, NPR did a thing on Full Metal one time. But that, it's like that kind
Panic
of stuff.
Or Alchemist?
Alchemist, not Panic.
Get it straight here.
Stupid question, but I had to ask.
Very funny. But yeah, so it's like, I thought, wow, that's really smart. I felt like lots of times the marketing that did happen, if there was marketing, was just done kind of like to the people who would have already known about it instead of really thinking outside the box. And there's way to market or not even market, but just do PR for stuff where you don't have to pay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I wonder, actually, that brings up a good point, and I wonder if there's a genesis here, because for the longest time, like, you'd go to an anime convention, you'd go to an anime convention, and you're sort of waiting for them to announce that they've licensed a show you've already seen. Like, you've seen the fan subs, and everyone's sitting there waiting, oh, they're going to bring this out, great. So the marketing is just telling people who have already seen it that it's coming out. They never really had to sell the show. Like, they're not selling it, they're just telling you it's there. So it's some promotional art, a title, and a date. There was never any real, like, they're not selling these things like you sell a movie, you know, I wonder if that's really the genesis, though.
Well, frankly, they were releasing too many to do that, effectively.
Yeah, well.
I mean, when you're churning out 8-9 discs a month, how do you do that?
Yeah, and it's like one dude, like, yeah, sometimes.
One person marketing.
Yeah, it's like one guy is the marketing guy. So.
I don't even want to think about the budget that poor guy had to work with.
Yeah.
Okay, so we know about the industry problems. We know that, you know, the money's just not there. The dub scene used to be pretty big. You had like 2 or 3 major studios in New York, 5 or 6 in Los Angeles, and a couple else in the rest of the country. What's happened to them?
Well, it's kind of like the anime industry. It just, I really blame people not buying, paying for their crap.
Well, right. But because, like, who's not here anymore, first of all? Still around.
It's weird because, I mean, I know mostly LA studios.
Right, okay.
And even though they're still around, like, Bang Zoom is around. And
Animes.
Animes.
New Generation
is still around. And it New Generation is still around. All of those are still around, but they're just not doing the volume of work that they used to do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them have transitioned over to video games. Yep. And, like, Media Concepts, they're down the street, man. They're still around, but I don't even know what they're doing, you know? I know that the building's still there and people still work there, but no idea what they're doing, you know?
Was it Elastic Media?
Elastic Media is still around.
Really, still?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Wow.
They only did, like, 3 or 4 dubs, didn't they?
Yeah, they were all... handful. They did all the Oniyama's stuff.
Okay, so, like, 7 dubs.
Tustin or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. They moved to some other place that was closer, but still very far away from L.A., what I mean. No, they're still around. Sometimes a studio will do, like, pilots and stuff. So, like, the audience will never actually get to see it, but they've done work, you know, or they're doing stuff that's not necessarily anime, but it's dubbing, and... you know.
So I gotta ask, you're obviously doing okay for yourself. You're keeping the lights on. Do you know anyone? And obviously we don't need you to name any names, but have you known people that have had to get out of it, had to find other work, had to find something else to do because there's no work anymore?
I have to say that everybody, voice actor wise, has had to adjust. Myself included. I'm not working as much in anime as I used to for a number of reasons. There's not as many of shows to work on, but also too, it's like some of the lower budget shows, they have gotten even smaller budgets, so they're, you know, paying actors very, very little, or not, you know, they're trying to find new people to pay them less. But I've adjusted for myself, and like I've done more games. I got an actual voiceover agent. It'll be a year this month, so stuff like that. And I know that other actors have survived by doing other things like writing, directing more. A lot of us has transitioned to video games. The cool thing is that way, way back in the day, anime dub actors, like, nobody would want to touch them. When I say nobody, I mean, like, people in other industries didn't want to touch them with a 10-foot pole. They, like, pretty much thought, ugh, they're, like, lower.
Bottom rung.
Yeah, bottom rung, crappy actors, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. And nobody would, you know, no agent wanted to sign them because... why should I sign someone who, one, I don't think it, you know, is working in a legit or, you know, is good enough, and two, they're going to be unavailable doing this anime work that pays very little, you know, if I get 10%, 10% of, you know, if I get...
$20 an hour.
Exactly, if, well, not $20.
Okay. Fine, 30.
But, you know, it's like I'm only getting $6 or something, It's not worth it for them. But recently, I think because the quality of acting has gone up so much, all of a sudden, agents, voiceover agents, have been kind of like, almost, at least in LA, every single, you know, anime voice actor worth their salt has a VO agent now, a legitimate VO agent. And we're going out for video games and all this other kind of stuff. And I think it's because it's like, you know, they've started to realize they are good, you know, and they have experience, and it's not like bringing somebody in new. And in some cases, oh, they have somewhat of a fan base, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've adjusted. I've still kept mostly in the voice acting and directing world. And I know that some others have picked up writing or picked up directing more. I don't know. I don't really know of any that have really gotten a day job or anything like that. It's different because I live in LA, and LA is a very Hollywood market. So most of the voice actors in LA, some of them are purely just voice actors, but a lot of us are trying to do on camera and doing other things, doing theater. There's other types of acting that now we just focus our energy into.
Right. The other thing I really wanted to ask about, I don't know if you had another, but there's a lot of talk. I saw somebody the other day was talking about cast fatigue. This is sort of what they're talking about. It's kind of the same 12 people that are in everything.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that? Have you noticed that? I'm sure you have, or maybe not. I don't know. What do you think about that?
It's I think there's certain things that fans don't get.
Really? Breaking news.
I don't want
people,
like, fans to, like, hate me or anything like that, because I love them, but they don't see what's going on behind the scenes. So they don't see certain actors might sound very good in the final product, but maybe it was a lot of work to get them there. And I think the ones that work regularly, you know, they do their thing, and you know, they're consistent, and they're easy to work with, and they're fast in terms of the syncing and all that other stuff. And so that's one element of why certain people work as much as they do, because it's not just their voice, or we know that they can act, but it's also that we know that it's going to be easy to direct them, and it's going to be easy time. I'm not going to be pulling teeth, because sometimes you'll get somebody who, oh my gosh, the voice quality is so perfect, but to get that performance out of them, it takes a lot of effort and studio time or whatnot. So that's, like, one thing that, you know, is not really talked about, like, from an audience point of view. But the other thing, too, is, like, I get it. Like, as an audience member, on one hand, I kind of sometimes don't want to hear the same people.
Get
I
sick
like,
of hearing
yeah.
Johnny Bosch's boy voice.
Yeah, but the thing is, Johnny is very, very good. And if he's suited for it, then he should be in it, you know? The other thing that I don't understand is in voice, I mean, it's not, no one ever complains about, like, if you listen to Disney cartoons on the animation on TV, they use the same freaking people
Rob
for
Paulson
everything.
Is in absolutely everything.
Yes,
yeah.
You know, Tara Strong is in everything. Yeah, yeah. And nobody in that, none of the fans in that market ever complain.
Well,
they're
there's
just,
six.
the point is, it's just not a big talent pool.
Yeah. Is what I mean, you know, there, but it's that. It's a clicky there, you know, like there's all these other voiceover people trying to get in there, but they're perfectly happy using the same 5-6 people to do everything. And no, the audience doesn't complain. They're happy hearing the same people over again. And and that's what being a celebrity is about. Like, no, I mean, who's going to be like, oh man, Brad Pitt in another movie. Oh, I'm so sick of these. Like,
there's plenty of people like that on the internet, but yeah.
Right. But for the most part,
internet doesn't
like,
count. Internet's a big hate machine.
But well, even for the most part, it's like, that's the point. So I don't understand why in anime it gets so, like, the whole cast fatigue gets so overly.
I think part of the, and I don't want to cast too many aspersions on this, but part of the problem is Funimation has been doing this for years where they're like, here's the cast announcement for this new show. And they're like, get excited. Here's the cast. And it's the 10 people that were in the previous show in a different order. And I think when they make that big a deal out of it and it's so boldly the same people every time, the fans are like, come on, you know, can we see a new name? You know, I kind of see it from that perspective. Like, maybe they shouldn't trumpet that they're using the same people over and
well,
over and over.
Well, here's one question then. You know, every major con has anime idol or something similar to it where, you know, some aspiring, you know, 17, 18-year-old girl ends up being the new voice actress that of her dreams. It doesn't seem like anything ever becomes of that. What happens, you know, when you get someone new in the studio like that?
Okay. Voiceover is not as easy. Well, it's like, if you can do it, it seems easy. But then if you can't do it, it's not that easy, you know? And
you're saying it requires talent and skill.
Yeah, and it's a very specific skill that even some on-camera actors totally want to do it, and they just can't get it. And then when you throw in that they have to match the lip flap, that's another thing. So I think every once in a while, you'll find somebody new who's never done it before, and it's like, oh my gosh, they were so amazing. And it's like they naturally take to it, but it's very, very rare. So most often than not, I feel like those competitions, it is an opportunity for someone like that who is not known to shine, but there aren't that many people like that is the problem.
So all the people going to the, you know, going to classes trying to become a dubbed voice actor, it's like film school. Maybe one of them will ever get work.
I wouldn't say one, but a few.
One out of every class, I mean.
Yeah. And I think here's the thing is, I think what people don't get really is that the producers and the directors love new people. They love new people who are good. So if that person is really good and they're new, they want to put them in everything. Because they haven't heard them before, and they're good. So there's the whole cast fatigue and the whole, like, the same people. If they could cast different people, they totally would, you know, unfortunately.
Usually just the timing isn't there and the...
But it's still a business, and now that the budgets are smaller, people need to be fast, and so...
So we're hearing that budgets have been cut and that you know, the people are having to work faster and turn things around in much less time and with a lot less effort. Specifically, what has been done on the production side to cut the budget? And you don't have to name names. What have people been doing?
What studios? What other studios? I know there's a studio who's gone to a different country to record because it's cheaper there. I've known a studio who's hired new people for very, very cheap rates. And it's like, on one hand, like for me as a voice actor, personally, I don't like that because it means those are my jobs that are gone. And it's upsetting. But on the other hand, it's like, I understand that, like, the studio needs to stay open, so they're trying to do what they need to do. The other thing that can be done is directors, maybe they try to work quicker, which means they're settling for takes that are not 100% perfect, but maybe it's like 90% there or 80% there, you know, or they're cross-casting more. Because then,
what's like cross-casting?
There's like a minimum. It's like, you know, I'm not going to drive across, you know, fight traffic for an hour to go in and record for 15 minutes and only be paid for 15 minutes, you know? So there's a 2-hour minimum. So then if there's a 2-hour minimum, we want to, instead of saying, oh, in the past, maybe we had the budget to have more actors in this show. And even though this character only has 10 lines and this character has only 6 lines, we'll call in a different person and we'll still pay them the 2 hours, even if they don't work that long. But now that the budgets are cheap, you know, like crunched, it's like, well, we'll get Stephanie to do it, because we'll just have her do a different voice and she'll do multiple characters, because we don't have to pay an extra person, you know, and we're paying for her entire time anyway. Things like that. There's other things on the production end, you know, where I'm sure got cut too, whether it be like translation or writing or you know.
Why don't you talk a little bit about writing? You've done a bit of that yourself, right?
Yeah, I did a little writing and I used to do a lot of it until my friends told me I needed to stop.
Because
what? did you have a writing problem, Stephanie?
Yes, I did. It makes it sound like I was a bad writer and they were like, you need to stop. No, I was just working way too hard. Because I was fairly fast, so then, and I was good, so people would want me to write all these scripts, and then I would, I'm also have trouble saying no, so I would accept them, and then I had these crazy deadlines, so I'd be in the booth, recording, and then I'd come home, and I'd just be, it was like anime all day long, and,
I don't know what that's like at all.
Yeah, really. My life isn't all that.
I wouldn't be able to, like, make a deadline, but I would be so tired, so I'd do things like, I'd sleep on the bathroom floor. Because it would be so uncomfortable and cold that I knew that I would wake up in 20 minutes naturally. Oh, I wouldn't have to worry about setting alarm and sleeping through the alarm because the alarm, or if I sat down to rest, you know.
As much as I like some of your screenplays, I got to side with your friends on this.
That's brutal. Yeah, that is brutal.
Go ahead. I was just going to say the other trick, if anyone needs to, in college, use to study, is that if I would sit down on a couch to rest, and there was a danger that I'd fall asleep, I would hold a really heavy book in my hand, because I knew that if I fell asleep, I would drop the book and it would slam on the ground and make a sound to wake me up. That's all.
On that note, I think we should get to the questions we have from Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to get this one going first. We got a question here for Stephanie from Uncle Cardboard Box. can you tell us, you have the new Erika 7 movie coming out. What can you tell us about that? What can we expect from it?
Okay. For those who don't know, it's September 24th, 7:30 p.m. local time. So whatever, 7:30, wherever you are. It's a theatrical release, which means it's going to be on the big screen, which is very exciting. It's one night only. It's like over 400 theaters, I think, in the U.S. And tickets actually go on sale. I don't know when this podcast airs, but goes on sale August 21st.
Which is the day that this podcast will.
Which is today, right?
All right, there we go.
August 21st, which is today. They can go to Eureka 7 Movie. 7 is spelled out, .bandai, B-A-N-D-A-I, -ent, like ent, .com.
And we'll link to it in the show notes.
Okay.
Absolutely,
okay, cool.
Yeah.
So the show, it's
spelled like Eureka, by the way.
Yeah. The movie is very cool. I had a really good time doing it, but it does not follow the series.
So wait, it's a reboot or?
I don't know how to describe it, because it's not a sequel. It's not a prequel. It's almost like as if it's just like a different story.
Alternate retelling.
I guess it's an alternate retell, but there's no retelling because it's a totally different story.
Oh,
you know?
Alternate universe.
Yeah, the characters are the same. But here's my character is pretty much the same. There's things that are different about her.
And you play
Eureka. Oh. Eureka. some characters are really different. Most of them are similar or the same. But there are a few characters, their personalities are very different. But it's all the same, well, most of the same characters from the series. It's a cool story. And it's very, it's kind of romantic.
Are the visuals like a big step up from the series? Because the series was gorgeous.
I didn't really get to pay too much attention. The visuals looked very good, but I didn't get to see all of it.
You got like a little low res thing in the booth.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's definitely not worse than
right.
than the
right.
than
spend
the
money
series.
On it.
Yeah, and I would say it probably looks like the good animation from the series, because sometimes in the series it
got a little janky.
Yeah. And it was never sloppy for any of the stuff that I saw. It was all really pretty. And you get to see Eureka and Renton as...
Yeah, sure. Spoil the hell out of it.
Okay. You get to see them as kids. That's all.
I'm sure fans will be absolutely stoked. I've only seen like 4 episodes of the show. So actually, that's another question. I'm not that familiar with the show. I've only seen a little bit of it. Can I walk into this cold and...
Yes. Okay. And I think that's the good thing about it. It's because you don't have to have seen anything in the series to get anything in the movie, because it's a completely separate story. And I know that with me personally, when I have a series that I like and then the movie comes out, sometimes as much as I'm glad that a movie came out, I'm disappointed because I already know the story, mm-hmm. you know, and
yeah.
I get bored. But it's because it's totally different, although it's the same characters that you like, it's cool.
That's so nice.
Yeah, that didn't happen to me at all on Evangelion 1.0.
I can't wait for the second one, though.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay, moving on. We've got a question here from Shin Taku. Who would you say are the best directors of anime other than Miyazaki or Oshii?
Oh, like Japanese directors?
Yeah. Justin, you want to take that? Gonagai, say Gonagai?
Yes, absolutely Gonagai. Did you ever see his live-action work, Ninja Dragon? I think it got a unanimous 1 star on Netflix. Actually, my personal favorite is Kunihiko Yuyama. Everyone knows him as the Pokemon director, if they know him at all. But he did Windaria, he did Goshogun, the Time of Trage. I love both those movies sexually.
I'm going to give it up for Mahiro Maeda. He's done some kind of crappy stuff, but I really loved his Animatrix shorts. Like, I thought those were really awesome. Yeah, he did the Final Renaissance or whatever, the one with the horrible massacre and the robots taking over.
Oh, right.
It's really cool. And he did Genkutsuo. I just love his knack for visuals. I think I love his aesthetic.
Oh, visually, I love Yasuomi Ometsu. Guy did Kite and Kite Liberator. I don't know. He's kind of obsessed with hand movement and clothing wrinkles. So whenever you see someone like really move their hand in a close up to a ridiculous amount that was completely unnecessary, it's probably his work.
Definitely anything. You don't have to
remember
answer.
Names of stuff.
Well, what's the last really good anime movie you saw? That
I liked Skycrawlers, but
that was Oshii.
I know, but the thing is, I am not that crazy about his other stuff, so I wouldn't actually say Oshii.
What about, I'm blanking. Guy did Kodocha.
Daichi. Oh, yeah. I love Kodocha, yeah.
You used to cosplay as...
Yes. I have a funny story about that, too.
You gonna tell us, or are you gonna hold out?
Okay, for those who know Kodomo no Omocha, when Sana makes the anti-kissing wheel, do you remember that?
Kind of wooden
ring around
her. It's like this
wooden ring around her. And the joke in it is that she gets to, because Hayama kisses her, and then she doesn't want to be kissed. So she brings the lumber, like, in the classroom, and she builds it before class, right? And then none of her friends can get close to her, and it's a big ordeal. And then at the very end, like, she can't even get out of the classroom door because she's built it too wide. She
I can't go to the bathroom.
Yeah, so it's funny. So I built an anti-kissing wheel when I was cosplaying as her. It was very clever. And I cosplayed at Anime Expo 1 year. But then soon discovered, once I got into the dealer's room, that I couldn't actually buy anything.
I could see that being a problem.
Yeah.
The wheel
yeah.
would stick out, and I couldn't get to the table. Like, I couldn't reach the table. You know, and then everyone is annoyed at me because I was, like, in the way.
You're taking up all this space.
Yeah, none of my friends could really get close to me, so, yeah. That's my story.
That's phenomenal. Okay, from Bradley C. Meek, what is NCAST's dream interview and or panel? I'm going to toss it out. We mentioned him earlier. I'm going to say Mamoru Oshii and a fifth of whiskey. That's the absolute like, it has to be in the room.
And sudden Japanese skills.
Well, right, yeah, you get a translator, but right. Handle a whiskey, Mamoru Oshii, I think we could have some fun.
That sounds amazing. You know, I think it's Stephanie Shea. That's the biggest cop-out ever. I'm on the spot. I can't think of anybody.
You know what, we're already running long, so I'm just going to end out with a question from our buddy Peter Tataro. What is the best kind of pie?
Pumpkin.
You know what, I'm gonna go out on a limb here. I'm gonna state my controversial opinion. Fuck pie. I hate pie. I like cake. Pie can go to hell. You heard it here.
Wow.
I'm stating it for the record. Pie sucks.
Direct your
Deal
anger
it,
to Zach at AnimeNewsNetwork.com.
Wow, you're going to create a whole pie war.
Awesome. Bring it on.
Well, now they're going to stop making pies and it'll be all Zach's fault.
I have a question for Peter Tataro. Why won't he invite me to New York Anime Fest? Just kidding.
Do you want me to leave that in?
I don't know. Sure, why not?
You are far from the only voice actor that he has gotten that from.
All right, well, we got to wrap it up, but thank you so much for being here, Stephanie. It's been great, and thanks, everybody out there, for listening.
And we'll see you next week.